But yeah, I often describe Akamai as kind of the Velvet Underground of like SRE, because
yeah,
it's the story about the Velvet Underground's first album was that like only like 250 people bought it, but each one of them went and started a band. And like Akamai is kind of the same way, where like, you know, still, you know, most people haven't heard of it, but either the people or the thought, you know, the techniques, like,
yeah,
are a big part of the foundation of the modern, you know, internet and modern internet companies.
I remember my first incident at Akamai. I actually learned about consistent hashing because it was one of those things. There was a product.
For our listeners, you know what consistent hashing is. I have the 20-minute explanation that they gave us when we joined the InfoSec department. But for our listeners who are coming into this cold, and actually many of our listeners who have probably not heard about Akamai at all, first of all, what is Akamai?
Sure. So Akamai is a company that runs a network of servers at the edge, right? So an ISP is close to where you live. They made their money through caching. So for example, if you type in a website for an Akamai customer, which
iTunes.com was the example I always used to career fairs. That was the one we were allowed to use. We were not allowed to use the fruit company in Cupertino.
Exactly. Yeah. You notice what I did there, where I just said, because I always forget, yes, like, what is the list we're allowed to use and what aren't we? But
yes, exactly.
Many Fortune 500 companies are Akamai customers, right? Yes. So you type in one of these websites, and through some magic, Akamai has the internet mapped out. They figure out what server, Akamai server, is closest to you in the internet, closest to you in a topological sense. It's a little more complicated than that, but essentially that. DNS is the interface they use to hand out the IP of that Akamai server. So you make a request for iTunes.com. Akamai figures out where you are. Akamai hands you back the IP of an Akamai server that is close to you. You connect to that, and there's a good chance that server... So that server proxies your connection back to iTunes.com. That server, Akamai is a content delivery network. That server probably has the song that you want to get in cache at the edge.
Yes. Yes.
So you don't put word on Akamai server.
The 1989 Taylor's version, all the songs are there already. Like someone else has requested them before you. Yes.
Yep. And so it's all there at the edge. So you get it super fast. You know, there are other optimizations, right? TCP works better if you connect to something close by than something far away. So you're less, so you have better performance.
Right.
Most of Akamai's business now is security related, right? And so there's all sorts of interesting and useful things you can do if you sort of sit as a buffer between the user and the home server or the company server.
It's much easier to absorb a DDoS attack when you can do that at the ISP of most of the ISPs whose broken customers are originating the traffic, rather than if you have to do that all in Cupertino.
Exactly. And Akamai had a scale and sophistication that, you know, by both intelligence of the platform and just how distributed it was, it could absorb a lot of those things, right? I think there was another incident where actually you called me up at like 3 o'clock in the morning for a set of servers that I watched, and you're like, hey, there's an attack. And I looked at it, I'm like, yep, there's an attack. And we're like, should we do anything? I'm like, well, actually the changes to do something, it's fine, right?
It
like
seems
just
fine.
Watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, watchful waiting.
So it's really fun, right? Like right out of school to get to play with systems like that run the internet.
Yeah.
You know, so we were talking about consistent hashing.
Yes.
One of the cool things about, so you think about, oh, you have these hundreds of thousands of servers spread across the world. How do you get them to work together? And I think one of the important lessons I learned at Akamai was like the first rule of distributed systems problems is try to avoid solving a distributed systems problem, right?
If at all possible, don't.
Yeah. And so like consistent hashing is a way of thinking about how to deal with having a lot of machines without needing to worry about them all talking to each other. So in particular, the idea is, hey, you know, I want to connect to a server. The server should be up, hopefully. Is there a way to do that without the system having knowledge of which 200,000 servers are up at any given moment and doing a calculation each time? Right. And so the idea behind consistent hashing is you imagine there's a ring, and you imagine each server is a place on the ring. Yeah. And then you as a user, you come in and you have a hash that puts you somewhere else on the ring. And then what you do, and that hash is consistent. You always end up at the same place on the on that circle.
So then, it's picking some features about me, like likely my IP address, and it's using those features to like pick a place on that ring that
exactly.
corresponds to me. Yeah.
Right.
And it's you, always going to be the same place as long as I'm coming in from the same IP every time.
Exactly. Yeah. And so then the idea is you always end up at the same place on that circle. And the way you pick what server you go to is you move along the circle. And the first, similarly, the servers were hashed on the circle. The first right. server that you hit is the one you try to connect to. And if it doesn't work out, no big deal. You know, you
talk
keep
to
walking
the next
along
one.
The circle, go to
right.
the next one.
Okay.
And then that's super powerful because it means, you know, in the example we gave above with iTunes, it means that you are generally going to go back to the same server each time.
Right.
People close to you will go to the same server each time. And right. so, you know, it's yeah. likely the same Taylor Swift song or something will be in cache right there. And that's how you can yeah. kind of make sure right. you go back to the right server without yeah. them all globally talking to each other.
Yeah. My first guest on the podcast was Willie Williams, who was actually an intern on the mapping team at Akamai in like 2004 and had a story oh, wow. about some changes that they made, not to the consistent hashing, but to the geolocation, which wound up accidentally routing all of Yahoo's traffic to Japan. needless to say, Yahoo was not terribly happy about this, but they got it fixed. And so, yeah, same company for any viewers who've been caught that episode and, you know, yeah, some of the technology underlying that with the goal, right, of... yeah, keeping your accesses local. Because also, like, clients will often, like, request the same thing multiple times. So, you know, there's a certain locality to that. There's, locality, like, certain geographic regions will get super interested in Taylor Swift at the same time, possibly because, yep. because there's an Eras Tour concert happening there, you know, that day. So, yeah.
So, yeah, and it was super fun, right? Because most... many people would learn about consistent hashing, say, in a class in
right.
college.
Right.
I wasn't a CS major. I was learning quantum field theory or, you
right.
know, whatever.
Right.
I was doing physics. So, like, the way I learned about consistent hashing was there was an incident in the Mapper org where a bunch of servers that served a particular type of traffic went down. And, you know, the root cause had to do with how consistent hashing had been implemented for that particular product in a way that worked great in testing, worked great for small customers. But when you put a big customer on it, you ended up with a memory leak or something like that.
Okay,
right?
Yeah, sure.
So, but it was cool because it's like, oh, I got to learn about this really interesting mathematical concept in distributed systems because something broke at scale that took down
right.
a bunch of services.
Right. And suddenly the math was relevant to something in the real world. And
yeah.
also we had to fix it like yesterday.
Exactly. Another cool thing about that though, was like when that happened, there was no customer impact because the way Akamai systems were designed was to, there are all sorts of tricks to
right.
mitigate.
You kind of just move, if the clients can't connect, they kind of just keep moving around that ring and there are a lot more servers and eventually they hit one that works, hopefully. So.
Yeah, yeah. And other tricks too, right? There's just
yes.
a lot of really beautiful, beautiful mitigations.
The towering pile of hacks that makes the internet
yeah.
work as well as it does. Yeah.
If one set of config seemed to make everything crash, go to a machine that was running the config from an hour ago, right? Like
exactly,
so many things like that, right?
Yes.
So it was cool to see a system that resilient,
yeah.
which like the jobs I used to run stuff on Open Science Grid were a little resilient, but not that resilient.
Yeah.
The other thing that I thought was really cool though, was just the culture, right? How people would handle yeah. an incident.
Mm-hmm.
I think Eric Nygren used to say like people would ask him like, hey, what's the thing you're most proud of at Akamai? And yeah. he'd say the incident process.
Yeah. yeah.
Right. Which,
because you know, that was his baby, or at least
yeah.
when we received it, it had gone through a couple hands, I think, since him. But his fingerprints, his authorship was very, very evident on like, you know, everything there. And a lot of the innovations that we received, like the, you know, business incidentally, like he had pioneered almost by necessity, because like the CEO walked into his office while he was running an incident as the tech lead. He was like, I cannot both keep the CEO happy and keep the engineers moving forward. Congratulations to the person next to him. You have the con. And he became the first business incident lead by walking Tom out of his office. Or whoever was the CEO then.
And the cool thing about that is like, that wasn't just Akamai, right? Like so many folks at Akamai went to run critical bits of platform at Facebook and Google and other places. And, you know, like you read the Google SRE book and you see the incident process at Google and it's like many of the same attributes.
I think some of that is convergent evolution. I've been trying to trace that. I think some of it is convergent evolution, but some of it absolutely is. Like the guy who was the architect on query at Akamai, which was a way of running SQL like queries over the entire network to answer questions ranging from, you know, how many regions are up to like what software is running on these servers. Took that to Facebook and was the lead architect on OzQuery, which folks here may have used, which is the open source version of that. Doesn't have all of the nice systemic features. Long story there. But the Uptix folks, also some former Akamai folks, are working on bringing that to market. I often describe Akamai as kind of the Velvet Underground of like SRE, because it's what the story about the Velvet Underground's first album was that like only like 250 people bought it, but each one of them went and started a band. And like Akamai is kind of the same way, where like, you know, still, you know, most people haven't heard of it, but either the people or the thought, you know, the techniques, like, are a big part of the foundation of the modern, you know, internet and modern internet companies.
Yeah, it's funny. I think some of it too is like Akamai had a very like East Coast buttoned up culture, and
academic culture too.
And the Silicon Valley companies like Google, I think, have done a better job evangelizing. So like,
yes, oh my god,
so that's definitely a thing, right?
Akamai was afraid to talk about some of this stuff. Sometimes because it was like, oh, this is proprietary, this is to us. Sometimes it was because like we don't. This feels janky, and we're embarrassed by it. And, no, actually, it's like the best thing in the industry, but we were very embarrassed by it. And sometimes. You know, also because like it had been, we built it with Perl and Makefiles in like 1998 and just kept it going. And so the Googles of the world got to come back and like build it with like modern software, you know.
Well, yeah.
Thanks so much for watching and listening. If you enjoyed this outtake, check out the full episode with Abhijit Mehta, link in the episode description below.